What's being called one of the most important environmental decisions in decades for the Black Hills is being decided over the coming months. The South Dakota Board of Minerals and Environment finished up the first week of hearings on the proposed PowerTech uranium mine plan for the Southern Black Hills. The Board of Minerals convenes again in November to continue the hearings. And next week, hearings before the State Water Management Board get underway. That board will consider water appropriation applications and the groundwater discharge plan. Joe O'Sullivan is an investigative reporter and news feature writer for the Rapid City Journal, and Daniel Simmons Ritchie covers general news in Pennington County for the Journal. They're covering the story and wrote a special series for the Journal on the issues surrounding the mining proposal, and they're with us on the line. Joe and Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Well, the Journal called the issue of uranium mining in the Black Hills possibly the most important environmental decision to face the region in decades. Joe, why is this viewed as such an important decision?
Well, whatever decides to go forward, I mean, you know, not only do you have a mine that could be in operation for 10 or 15 or 20 years, but you also have whatever cleanup is required that could go on for decades afterward. And you see that with the old open pit mines and the old underground mines that produced uranium back in the 50s and 60s. And you know, some of those are still cleanup sites.
Well, this wouldn't be the first uranium mine in South Dakota. Daniel, what's the history of uranium mining in South Dakota?
Well, uranium mining in general has been going on in Edgemont for quite a bit, I think, since the 50s or 60s, back when uranium prices were really high. And this technique, it really died off, I think it's around the 70s or the 80s, uranium prices really went down, and so did the mines across most of the western U.S. But in recent years, this new type of mining called in-situ leach mining has really become a kind of dominant standard here. It's cheaper to do, and it has less, you know, physical effects on land. You're not strip mining. You're essentially pumping water into the ground and drawing it back up and drawing uranium back with it. So that's been around since about 40 years. And there's more of them. There's a lot more proposed across the country, particularly Wyoming, a few in Texas, and this is South Dakota's one.
Now, Daniel, you in the articles for the Journal, you researched and looked into some of the in-situ uranium mines elsewhere in the country. I know that PowerTech has said that its uranium mine near Edgemont will be environmentally friendly and safe. What did you find in your reporting?
Well, there's a few different, factors involved there. The first is that there have been problems at other mines, mostly leaks, that kind of thing, which is a concern to opponents. Now, whether PowerTech can operate its mine safely is, something a matter of debate. The other bigger issues, which we have, you know, a bit more evidence on, is how these mines reclimate, restore the groundwater when they're finished mining. And there's some pretty good evidence on that question out there. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is kind of one of the lead regulatory agencies, really oversees the groundwater restoration. Basically, to take a step back here, when a mine is finished after the mine for, say, 10 years or so, they're required to return the groundwater to normal. This is a process, you know, inherently when they're extracting uranium, they increase levels of certain chemicals like uranium in the groundwater and things like arsenic. So they're supposed to pump fresh water back into the aquifer, into this area that they're mining from, and kind of restore it back to its pre-mine condition. But there's some important kind of caveats about that. As far as I understand, for all the research I've done, all the people I've talked to, and the regulatory agencies themselves, no mine can actually bring it perfectly back to pre-mine condition. They usually have to relax the standards because you can't undo that process. Now, the big concern there is for environmentalists is how those chemicals can spread when you're finished mining. Do they just stay in the area at elevated levels, or can they start drifting? And that's a question that highly in debate. The regulatory agencies say that there's been no examples of other wells being contaminated by the spread. But I talked with a hydrologist in Texas who believes he may have the first evidence of this happening at a mine in the Kingsville area in Texas, which is around the Gulf Coast. And in that case, uranium was found in escalator levels about 1,000 feet away from this mine. It was a livestock well. So those are some of the main environmental concerns about this type of mining.
Now, Joe O'Sullivan, in your reporting, you found broad support in the town of Edgemont and around the area of Dewey, where the mine would bring much-needed jobs and economic development. But other residents, like Dayton Hyde, who runs the Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary downstream from Edgemont on the Cheyenne River, he's strongly opposed. Is this an issue that has really divided a lot of people in the Southern Hills?
I think it has, and I think it lines up with, you know, there's a good bit of support of this in Edgemont, but a lot of questions in the region. You know, there's a lot of people in Hot Springs that are opposed to it, and, you know, down by the Wild Horse Sanctuary, which is south of there, because people are worried that, to pick up on Dan's point, that, you know, there's not a lot of research on how far contaminated water moves in these mines, especially after they're shut down, because there's very little monitoring of contaminated water movement after these mines are shut down. So it's kind of an open question. I mean, maybe the water doesn't spread at all. Maybe it spreads 1,000 feet. Maybe it spreads a mile. Maybe it spreads 5 miles. And nobody really knows. And that's driving some of the concern.
The water really, really is the hot button issue here, it seems. Are there misunderstandings over what all is will be involved with the water, Joe?
I think there are misunderstandings. I think people are worried that, some of this water, if you look at the Indian Cara water down by Edgemont, it's not usable for, you know, drinking water for a few different reasons, partially because it's contaminated with uranium, but partially because there's high amounts of salt in the water. So, the mining proponents say, well, we're going to use this water. It's not really usable anyway. Other people say, well, you know, we live in a semi-arid region and water should be conserved, you know, wherever we can.
Well, let's go back a little bit further here and talk about PowerTech. This is the company that wants to mine uranium. What is PowerTech? I don't know, Joe. Is that something you've been writing about?
Sure. Yeah, PowerTech is a Canadian company. It's been around in several kind of incarnations since 1984. But really, what happened was it was sold. It was making water boilers in the late 90s and early 2000s, and it was sold in I think late 2004. And the people that bought it started looking into uranium mining, and they bought up mineral rights in Dewey Burdock here, the project near Edgemont, as well as projects in Wyoming and Colorado, and have kind of started trying to do uranium mining.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. With us is Joe Sullivan and Daniel Simmons Ritchie. They're covering the mining issue, the mining proposal by PowerTech in the Southern Black Hills. And last week there was the first week of hearings on the proposed PowerTech uranium mining plan for the Southern Black Hills. Joe, as far as those hearings last week, what happened?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's kind of tough to say. So the Board of State Board of Minerals and Environment heard a lot of public testimony. People came out on the first day, mostly opposed to the uranium mine, but a lot of Edgemont people. And then what began after that is it's sort of like almost like a jury trial, where PowerTech makes the case for why it would like to do the mine, and then opponents that are signed up to oppose it kind of make their counterarguments. And it went pretty slow last week. There are really only three witnesses called so far, all of them PowerTech, since they're going first in the case. And so it's going kind of slowly, the process.
Was there are meetings coming up, hearings again in November before the Board of Minerals. Was that part of the original plan, or was this supposed to be 1 week hearings?
Well, I think 1 week was certainly I think what people were hoping for, but it's obviously going to take a second week. And I talked to the hearing chairman Rex Hagg, and he's not sure what will happen if we reach the second week of hearings and the case isn't resolved then. So. Potentially, I suppose it could go longer. And in the meantime, the State Water Board, State Water Management Board, is going to start their hearings in early October.
And, Dan, what do you expect will happen at the State Water Management Board hearings? Do you think they'll be pretty much along the same line as what happened last week during the Board of Minerals hearings?
I have to say, to be honest, I'm not too sure. The water angle isn't something that I've closely looked at. I've been really looking at the kind of mining process itself and the contamination element. But Joe might have a better feel for that than I do.
From what I gather, talking to people, it's going to be a very similar to this week. It's a lot of the same people opposing the mine, and it will be, again, kind of like a contested jury case where each side makes their case about the mine. There won't be, as far as I know, there won't be public testimony at the Water Board hearings.
Well, Dan, going back to any possible contamination, the people of Edgemont seem to be, as we were talking, in support of the PowerTech mine. How convinced or how much faith do they have in the PowerTech company?
And that's a good question. Of those I've spoken to, I've spoken to some people in Edgemont who are very for the mine, definitely looking for those jobs, and quite persuaded by the company that contamination will be, removed, the mine, the area will be restored, and it won't drift as some people fear, some critics fear. And to an extent, there's a certain amount of, fear of the unknown about this, about how contamination can spread. And I have heard critics who have kind of been a bit, overblown about this, that it could spread hundreds of miles. I talked with a hydrologist who believed that was a very remote possibility. If this does spread, if the mine can't be restored back to normal, which seems likely based on all the other in-situ leach mines across the country, it will probably spread, high levels of uranium. Contaminants will spread very slowly, maybe over a period of decades, with the groundwater, which I believe is south. I think it's southwest. And there isn't a lot out there. There are wells out there, though, particularly some livestock wells. And I guess it's going to be a debate for Edgemont whether they, those wells, that area, the groundwater could be sacrificed if it does contaminate, if it does migrate, as some suggest. And I guess for those people in Edgemont, it's really a matter of, who do they trust? Do they trust the company and its claims, or some of the environmental groups and scientists who have concern about this, about the way these contaminants move?
Joe O'Sullivan, does this really get down to an economy versus environment debate, or is there more going on?
I think you're pretty much hit the nail on the head there. The mine supposedly would bring, it would be a $40, $50 million project, and it could bring up to 160 direct jobs in the mine's peak years, and which could provide for another 110 spinoff jobs. And when you talk to the people at Edgemont, the population of Edgemont in 1980 was about 1,400 people, and right now it's about half of that. So these people are watching their town shrink, and they really think that this kind of economic boost can really kind of save their town. On the other side, you've got people worried about the environment, and the Black Hills are a big tourism region, and they worry that this could affect the economy in that sense.
Do the letters to the editor in the Rapid City Journal, Joe, are they giving us a good idea of really how people feel on both sides of this issue?
I think so, and I think we've had a big response on both sides of it, and kind of talking out all angles of it.
Now, regulation is something that we've been talking about. Are we clear if, say, PowerTech gets the permits, the applications that they need, and the uranium mine starts working? Do we know how this will be regulated and the roles of both the state and the federal entities?
We don't, and that's one of the big questions that opponents bring up. It's not real clear right now, or at least the state isn't revealing to what extent they're going to be able to regulate the mine and keep an eye on things. And, you know, opponents, you know, the NRC and EPA have to grant licenses for this mine to go forward, and opponents of the mine point to kind of problems at the federal level of the NRC not keeping a close eye enough on mining as it should. You know, other people say the states generally aren't as good to regulate, and that's really one of the larger questions about this is it's not clear whether the great regulatory framework, not just in South Dakota, but for in-situ uranium mining anywhere. So this kind of goes forward. If this goes forward, it kind of goes forward under that cloud.
Yeah, Daniel, looking at where the other places where in-situ mining is going on, does that give us any idea or how things might work in South Dakota?
It does a bit. To an extent, it does. But then it's kind of a different ballgame here. Texas and Wyoming are the big states that have these mines and historically had them since they were introduced about in the 1970s or so. But they also have their own state agencies that are quite heavily involved in the regulatory process. And as Joe explored in his stories, we really aren't going to have that in South Dakota. So how this is going to work is, I think, something that quite a few people are scratching their heads over, what kind of oversight the state will have. I mean, Wyoming and Texas, even with their state agencies involved, already get pounded with a lot of criticism about the job they do regulating these mines. For instance, in Texas, the state agency is taking a lot of flack over relaxing the restoration standards, as I mentioned before, you know, and essentially allowing mine companies to finish their mine, restore this mine to much higher standards of, say, uranium in the water than when they originally began the project, that kind of thing.
Well, Joe Sullivan, what happens next? As we mentioned, the State Water Management Board has its hearings next week, then the Board of Minerals convenes again in November. Do we have any sort of idea regarding time frames here?
It's a little unclear, although the State Board of Minerals and the Water Management Board, they will both, I believe, vote at the end of these contested hearings. So we could see votes from both of those boards, and those boards grant all the state permits that the project would need. So there's a chance we could have those in November. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has issued a draft license, which is kind of a preliminary license for the project, and they could issue their final license as early as, I think, next spring, along with the EPA, which covers the injection wells, which injects the water into the ground to absorb the uranium. And I believe they're working its way through there. So, you know, when I talked to the project manager, Mark Hollenbach, he said that I think they could be starting some preliminary construction next spring. And that's certainly an optimistic timeline if everything gets approved. But it's a possibility.
Given whatever way the boards rule, are appeals a part of this at all?
I don't believe they are. So I mean, the boards can approve this and attach conditions along with it, but I think it's really a question of of if the boards approve this and the NRC and the EPA go ahead, it's pretty much a done deal.